the future.
There are no people.
There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
Buddy, welcome. It is Friday, May 21st, 2021. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Each week, I talk to vaccinated shit poster Sean Kitchen about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. Yes, we are streaming live on our YouTube channel, everybody. Don't forget while you're there to smash that subscribe button, like the stream, and hit that bell so that you know every time that we go live about the show. On today's show, we are back, and yes, we survived the gas shortage of 2021. It was brutal, but we made it. And Israel and Hamas have agreed to a ceasefire after more than a week of intense violence that led to at least 243 Palestinian deaths and more than 60 who were children, and there were 12 Israeli deaths as well. That's reported by the BBC, and it looks like as of this morning that the ceasefire may not even last the day. Republican senators will not get on board with calling for a bipartisan commission looking into the January 6th insurrection, but Representative Tim Ryan of Ohio gives Republicans a lashing. We'll have that sound on today's show. New reporting of ProPublica shows that the Trump era helped launch a new breed of donor who now have a significant influence over the Republican Party. And according to a newly compiled report from the EPA, climate change is already having a significant impact on the U.S. Not that we needed to confirm to know that, but yes, climate change is already having that significant impact. Yes, not just in the U.S., the rest of the world, of course. But the EPA Administrator Michael Regan said, quote, "There is no small town, big city, or rural community that is unaffected by the climate crisis. Americans are seeing and feeling the impacts up close with increasing regularity." And as reported in the New York Times, those impacts include bigger wildfires that start earlier in the year, warmer seas, more frequent heat waves, persistent flooding, and even ragweed pollen season starting earlier. And big news in the EV market, the electrical vehicle market, Ford launched what may be a game changer in the electric vehicle market. On Wednesday, Ford unveiled the all-electric F-150 Lightning, which performs better than combustion engine models in many metrics. However, its almost $40,000 price tag is likely to mark a critical turning point. At just under $40,000, the F-150 Lightning is competitive with Tesla's base model Model 3, currently the most popular electric vehicle in the country, and is compatible with a combustion engine one, right? In some cases, even cheaper. How about that? The big F-150 Lightning reveal followed Biden's visit to a Ford plant in Dearborn, Michigan, the day before to pitch his EV plan. Biden's EV plan, which is folded into the infrastructure bill, calls for $174 billion in consumer tax credits, support of U.S. battery production, and funds to retool car plants to assemble EVs. Now, if we could only get the same kind of support when it comes to public transportation, how about that? And today's PA focus may sound like a broken record player, but progressives across Pennsylvania once again celebrated huge primary victories. Yes, this is getting to be a routine, and I'm kind of liking it. I'm liking this. Feeling good. Larry Krasner won a landslide against FOP-endorsed candidate Carlos Vega. The FOP and other pro-police PAC spent $250,000 to unseat Krasner, only to lose by a 2-1 margin. So I guess these articles in places like the New Republic that came out saying San Francisco and Philadelphia have soured on their liberal district attorneys. What happened? Maybe that was a little premature. Maybe you want to check your publication date before you actually start releasing garbage like that. Anyway, I don't know if it's garbage. It's actually a decent article, but whatever. On top of Krasner's victory, Krasner gained a lot of allies in the Philadelphia Court of Common Pleas. 7 of the 8 open seats went to nominees endorsed by Reclaim Philadelphia, the Working Families Party, and other criminal justice reform organizations. pretty freaking amazing. And out west, yes, House Representative Ed Gainey defeated Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto. Goodbye. Gainey gained traction as a movement candidate following the murder of George Floyd and the Black Lives Matter demonstrations. Was backed by SEIU Healthcare PA and groups like One Pennsylvania. He will become the first black mayor in Pittsburgh's history. Underscore that. Tyler Titus, won their primary for Erie County Executive in the far northwest as an out transgendered person. They will face off against the Republican nominee in November and have the opportunity to become the first transgender person to hold an elective executive position in the county, in the country. Sorry, my bad. Ezra Nanus crushed his primary election to become the next mayor of State College. He will become the first Jewish mayor in the city's history, and his victory only highlights how progressive movements is turning Center County into a solid blue county. This is incredible. In not so progressive news, but shocking to say the least, Wanda Williams defeated Harrisburg Mayor Eric Papenfuse. Williams raised $30,000 and was vastly outspent by Eric Papenfuse, David Schwenkweller, and Otto Banks. Wanda won by linking Papenfuse to his Republican donors and Schwenkweller and Banks, who were Republicans running as Democrats. So there you go. Harrisburg upside down. Here we go. House Representative Marty Flynn wins his special election to replace former Senator John Blake. The district had been trending red for some time, but Flynn was able to hold on to the seat. Blake left the Pennsylvania Senate to work for Congressman Matt Cartwright earlier this year. And in other news, go grab your Spurs, Cowboys! Yeehaw! Doug Mastriano is prepping his run for governor and is already taking shots at Lou Barletta's extremely white teeth, which is, again, in all fair, that's kind of like, you know, the open door, easy pickings, low-hanging fruit. You choose your metaphor. Mastriano held a fundraiser with Rudy Giuliani. Of course he did. Last week, and was spotted posing for photographs with an insurrectionist wanted for spraying bear spray at the Capitol Police during the January 6th attack on the Capitol. How about that? PA Senate Democratic Caucus continues hearings on Posse consolidation plan this week. This hearings for this week included testimony by faculty, staff, students, university leaders, and community members. And Cyril Mikulenko's new piece just dropped. Yep, saying, quote, this is the title of it, "Only a political uprising can save PA's higher education system." Boom. Mikulenko echoes what we've been saying for years on this program. Only organizing and direct action get the goods. In today's last call, in his first hearings after taking over as NASA's chief administrator, Bill Nelson pledges to move forward with the Artemis moon program and Mars ambitions, while stoking fears that China is on a course to dominate the future of space exploration. I mean, what would space exploration be without a little nationalism, huh? Huh? Come on. China becomes only the second country to successfully soft land a rover on Mars. The Zhurong rover successfully landed Friday, May 14th. On Wednesday, the rover sent back some selfies and some images of Mars. The Zhurong rover is part of China's Taiyuan 1 mission that arrived in Martian orbit back in February. A little further into the weeds, SpaceX grabs the contract for Firefly Aerospace Blue Ghost Lunar Lander in 2023. According to Firefly, quote, "Blue Ghost will be carrying 10 payloads for NASA's Commercial Lunar Payload Services, Task Order 19D mission." Whatever. In addition to separately contracted commercial payloads. Yes, folks, the next round of moon exploration is really a thing. And in some not-so-good beer news, Tired Hands owner Jean Broillet. How's that?
We just call him Gene.
Gene the Fourth was pushed out of day-to-day operations by employees for allegations of racism, sexism, and unsafe working conditions throughout the pandemic. When confronted, he stepped down immediately. The staff posted on the company's Instagram account that they will keep the brewery running as they look for new leadership. This story comes as a reckoning is happening across the craft beer industry. And if you recall, some point this summer, we hope, we're going to have the lead brewer from Narragansett Brewing Company. You know, that's not exactly a small brewing company, but she is the head brewer there. And she's very interested in talking about labor conditions in the beer industry, craft beer industry in particular. So we hope to look forward to that one coming up on Out to Coop Live in the coming weeks. And it is Sour Sunday this Sunday at Free Will Brewing as they have a new release to celebrate. Sounds like a cool one. Catch Lightning. It's 100% spontaneously fermented sour that is carefully blended combination of 1, 2, and 3-year oak-aged barrel stock. And tomorrow brings the latest batch of DDH Love Letter from the 90s, a double dry hopped IPA, brewed with flaked oats, flaked corn, and milk sugar. That's a delicious one. I love that one. And Craigolite is also back for those of you working on your beach body for a hot vac summer. And Free Will just opened a brand new tap room in Souderton, PA at the Broad Street Theater. It's just beautiful. Man, they redid this old theater. I created this old theater in downtown Souderton, and they put a tap room. They kind of worked with them from the ground up into the design. It's a beautiful theater. And as those kind of movie theaters begin opening up, you'll be able to have a little Free Will Brew right there with you. I want to remind you to tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org or tune in to Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. Make sure to subscribe to the Rick Smith Show's daily podcast on iTunes, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts. And you must check out, if you haven't already, if you're not sick of me hearing them, you should. If you're sick of me saying this, that means you must have already subscribed. Because if you don't, I don't know what you're doing. But you must check out the newly launched Sisters of the Night Caucus podcast. You can find it on Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. The episodes are amazing, and the amazing PA women stirring the political cauldron behind this podcast rock the house, and they know where the bodies are buried. As you could kind of hear in the most recent podcast when you had Representative Amanda Cappelletti on there, Amanda Cappelletti on there, and pretty clear that they're kind of going to be making some significant changes in the Pennsylvania legislature. Anyways, make sure you follow them on Twitter too as well at The Night Caucus. And attention gamers, The Game Inn is a Quakertown-based black family-owned gaming store. They're friends of the show, and they've got everything from retro N64s to the latest consoles. Get all your collectibles, action figures, Funko Pops, and your kids get a discount with every A on their report card. Check them out on Facebook, on Twitter, at The Game Inn. Got a question about a game, looking for something hard to get, just kind of message them on Facebook, their Facebook page, just look for The Game Inn, that's with two N's, or on Twitter, at The Game Inn with two N's. Or drop them an email at thegameinpa@gmail.com. And a special shout out as usual, to Jonathan Mann, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. Check out all his great stuff on his YouTube page and follow him on Twitter at SongADayMan. Program note for this coming Monday, Out to Coop Live, still kind of a little bit up in the air about what we're going to do for this Monday. So I'll put it out on Twitter and stuff. We got that kind of figured out. Just had a couple options going around in my head. So anyways, want to thank you to our newest May members. Thank you to Jillian once again for coming at the $10 a month level and for encouraging, Chris for kind of jumping up a little bit from the Christopher from the $5 a month level to the $10 a month level and as the patron page. Thank you so much. And look, they know it. You know it. I know it. Sean knows it. We want a progressive future. We need progressive media. Support Pull No Punches homegrown progressive media today. Become a patron of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Just go to patreon.com/rcpress. Look, we got rid of Trump. Now the hard work of building a progressive future begins. We're here for the fight and we need you. Become a patron for the price of a good beer once a month. Help keep the media and the movement, the media. Become a patron for as little as $5 a month. Go to patreon.com/rcpress today. Sean, man, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm loving the summer-esque weather. Even though if it was suddenly turning on the heat a little bit, was a little uncomfortable outside, but inside for that matter. But I spent the week in the yard just digging stuff, and it's like my transition away from like a hellish year for here. So I gave myself some time this week just to dig and mulch and plant stuff. Pretty cool.
Nice. I put my I put my air conditioning units in yesterday. I was not going to deal with this shit right now.
You're not quite as enthusiastic as me, I guess.
No. But no, I mean, like, it felt, I would say it's been a pretty cool spring, especially out here in Harrisburg. So, I mean, I knew like the first heat wave was coming sooner or later. So, you know, I put my air conditioning units in and, you know, I stored up on all that gas, to run, you know, run the AC units and have
that burning. Thank goodness, man. I'm telling you, I don't know about you, but I had my trash bags full of gasoline in the back of my car. I just make sure, you know, I mean, I filled up every kind of storage tub I could have. I just like packed it in the back seats of my car. It was great.
Some totes.
Totally.
The photos. Okay. I wish we were like talking last week. I wish we had our podcast last week because I wanted to talk about this. That's why I put it in the show notes. But like the photos of the people just like panic buying gasoline, like was fucking incredible. Like,
and did you, can I just say, did you see how many of those photos were taken at a Wawa?
More than a handful.
Yes, exactly. I was like, oh my God.
It was great. The do you watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia at all?
I've watched some of it. I haven't watched the entire show, but.
Did you ever see the ones where they the gang solves the gas crisis?
No.
So they literally were filling like 55 gallon drums and like they had 10 of them filled with gas and no one was buying it. So like they tried to return the gasoline a couple days later and the guy's like, no. So Rob McElhenney, like one of the guys, one of the creators of the show, pretty much tweeted out like, hey, I've seen this episode before.
That's awesome.
Like it's pretty funny when like a TV show becomes reality like a few years down the line.
Well, so. You see, there was even like a Hummer that blew up, right? Because they, you know, gas explodes and stuff, especially when
it's serious?
Yeah. It was like there was a picture of it was completely on for the guy got out okay. But it was like the burnt out husk of the Hummer was sitting there, like not far from the gas station. Thank God it didn't happen in the gas station. That would have been something.
And also else. Like gasoline eats through plastic.
Exactly. That's what I was like. I mean, I literally saw these people like filling up trash cans. Right. I mean not trash cans, trash bags. Right. Yeah. And there's pictures of trash bags full of gas. And I'm like, do you not know anything? Do you not like literally? I mean, one, you know, and then I'm also like, this also shows you how degraded our economy has become. Like folks that like who work at gas stations now. Right. Because they're just kind of completely like throwaway cheap ass jobs. Right. That are, you know, like pay crap. Because like, back when I was growing up, if somebody was filling up something like that, there'd be like five people out there to put a stop to you and the police would be there within seconds, right? Now they're like, oh, look at the stupid people. Oh, well, better lock the door, Harry.
Like, we were talking in our group, like, where these people get their news from. I think, like, if you drew a Venn diagram of the people who believe the election was stolen and the people who were filling up like plastic buckets full of gas, it'd be like one big circle.
Oh yeah. I mean, I want to know how many people that were in those pictures were actually on Mastriano's bus down to the July 6th. That's what I want to know.
Probably a few of them.
I'm telling you. But that wasn't that crazy?
Yeah. It was funny just seeing the photos come out for like 3 or 4 days straight. There's this Facebook group called, of course, they're from Pennsylvania. It's sort of like the people of Walmart, but for like Pennsylvania, and it's pretty reductionist. I'm not gonna lie, but it's like it's a really funny like release. Like if you're a class person who cares about like classes within like the social structure, this is definitely not a group for you. Like because it's pretty reductionist as fuck.
But I mean, I think that look, I think the fact that a lot of those pictures, came out of Pennsylvania or got around the area. I mean, really, I think is more of a testimony to what you were kind of mentioning before. Is like, you know, this is how deeply this kind of right wing media infrastructure has penetrated, right? That because like I was like, you know, my wife and I were talking about this and it was like. The fact that the people are doing this and it's not just one person doing it. It tells you that in one of these like dark recesses of the internet, that this is a thing.
on Facebook.
Well, I guess that's true. Yeah. It just blew my mind.
I remember, like, my mom called me. She's like, well, what do you think about this gas shortage that's going on? I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Turn off Fox News, would you? I mean, come on.
I know, like, she doesn't watch Fox News. She watches, like, a lot of CNN and stuff like that. Like, she's paying more attention to, like, the political stuff. But, I mean, I guess it's, like, her Facebook feed of people just, like, posting stuff. Like, it's very mixed. I mean, my dad posts a lot of bullshit conservative stuff on his feed, and probably like wondering like what the fuck is he talking about.
Well, I gotta say, I mean, like, look, my folks came down from New York for the weekend, and they it was our first time we've seen them in, you know, god, long time. Like, we're all vaccinated now and all this kind of stuff, which is great. So anyways, they came down, and you know, my stepfather is kind of prone to kind of conspiracies at times. And so, you know, my wife asked, like, oh, did he ask yet about the gas shortage? I'm like, no, he was just asking about, like, whatever. And then literally like a half an hour later, he's like, how's the gas situation down there?
That's what I was like.
And of course, I'm a complete wise ass. And I'm kind of like, oh man, it's bad. I haven't seen, like, I was driving like 20 miles out of my way just to get gas yesterday. And he's like, really? I'm like, no, it's fine.
I would definitely have fun with that.
Turn off the faucet, man. You know, it's like,
yeah.
Anyways, other than that, that was pretty crazy last week. I do wish we had the show last week, because there was so much kind of cool stuff, and some of the stuff I didn't put in the show notes today just because it was kind of, you know, a little bit kind of past us at this point. But so let's just talk a little bit about this, because this is, I mean, the situation right now. I think this is fascinating at a political level in terms of what's happening in world response, what's going on between Israel and kind of Hamas right now, or the Palestinians more broadly. You know, I think you see the mainstream media doing their best to try to both sides the whole thing. But, you know, it's been really, really hard for them to do this, right? When, you know, you've got just kind of ordinary people kind of being like, yeah, but Israel has got like guided munitions and warplanes, right? And Hamas has got like rockets, right? That are unguided and things like this. Is hardly like a war.
This is like taking a sledgehammer to an anthill.
Well, exactly.
I mean, like, I don't want to reduce it down to that, but I mean, like, it is, I mean, there is one actor here who has all the money, all the power, and like an actual military.
Yep.
And it's not Hamas.
No.
Like, and it's,
and I think that is it. I think the shift in the discourse has everything to do with, and this is why I wanted to give it a kind of a front and center place today, is because, I mean, one, just the sheer atrocity, what the hell's going on. But secondly, because I think that the way the pushback now is a result of the kind of progressive gains that have been made and the shift in national discourse. I mean, thanks to, you know, people like Rashida Tlaib. Right. I mean, when, you know, Biden went to Ford to go kind of shout his EV stuff, she met him on the tarmac. Right. Met him on the tarmac and kind of like, you know, again, as the only kind of Palestinian who's ever been there, kind of says, you need to pay attention to this. I know you don't want to talk about Israel, but this is what we're going to talk about. And to the point where he even gave her a shout out in his speech. Right. And thanking her, even though he called her Rashid and not Rashida, but, you know, whatever you got. Sometimes the aviator glasses does weird things to you, but I mean, thanks to her.
I mean,
you know,
it also helps.
Thanks to Ilhan Omar. I mean, thanks to people who've been pleading his case. You got new, like, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, has just kind of reintroduced like a bill to kind of, you know, to hold back any funding, military funding of Israel. I mean, this was just unthinkable, like, even like, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 years ago.
I mean, no, and it also shows you what happens when you have that representation of having
exactly
Muslim women, you know, in office.
Yep.
With Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib. Like, yeah. I mean, you also had Bernie Sanders, who introduced a resolution to revoke the funding that Biden sent over the 3/4 of a trillion dollars, what, or $1 million or $1 billion, like. You know, we have all this money to, like, just throw away to, you know, Israel at the time, and but we don't like fund this stuff here back home.
Right.
And it's, I think what's changing is, it's finally changing, and I think like they're changing the national discourse within the Democratic Party around this. Like, there's only so many times you can get away with like Hamas uses X for human shields excuse,
right?
Which has been like the trope.
I mean, when Israel goes and like levels the media building, right, with the AP reporters and other reporters in it, like, and say, well, Hamas is human shields, and you know, now people are asking questions like, well, what I mean, Hamas is like, you know, the recognized administrative body of the Palestinian territories. So when they said human shield, what did they have there? Did they have like an office for filing complaints about clean water? Or I mean, what was it exactly? Right. People are asking details about like, okay, human shield. Really? What was there?
I mean, like it's on the way back to Harrisburg on Monday, we spent like a half hour, 45 minutes talking about this issue with going on and happening in between Israel and Palestine. And my mom, let's just say her diction was pretty crude with the way like she was talking about it, but like, you know, just like, you know, you have this atrocity going on, and it's just like, it's, you know, like we are, you know, you're wiping out a culture at this point, like in the Middle East, like a culture that's been there for like tens of, or what, 5 or 6,000 years. Yeah. Like, I mean, it is an atrocity, and it has to stop. And I think it's now getting to the point where, this past week, even in Harrisburg, I saw like 15 or 20, like,
yeah,
millennials and Gen Z kids, holding Free Palestine signs and stuff like that. Like, it is changing. There is a complete generational divide that's being exposed here.
Right.
Well.
And the new language, right? I mean, this is the amazing thing, comes right out of, you know, Black Lives Matter movements, right? When they're talking about, say, kind of like systemic white supremacy, right? And again, that's complicated, obviously, when you're talking about kind of Israel, but it's saying, you know, this kind of, you know, this looking at that structure of this, and to talk about Israel as an apartheid regime. I mean, this is what Michael Brooks, you remember Michael Brooks, this was what he would always come back to when it talks about the Israeli situation. People would ask him questions. I remember I saw, you know, multiple, you know, times where he was, you know, giving these live events, and people would ask him, and, you know, I understand that Israel and Palestine is a complicated thing. And he's like, it's not complicated. You stop that. It's not complicated. Israel is an apartheid state. It may not have always been that, but it is an apartheid state. You have one side that operates the entire, like, the monopoly of violence, and you have another side which is kind of like, you know, being kind of kept down systemically, and having their property kind of like taken away. And again, that doesn't mean that there's not violence, right? I mean, again, it's like there's any time there's a situation of kind of an intense oppression and things like this, you're going to get violence, you're going to get extremism, you're going to get all that stuff. But in terms of the associated power, and I thought that I heard in multiple venues, like on mainstream news, kind of guests that are coming on, talking about it in those terms as an apartheid state. And that starts to shift the whole discourse, right? Because one of these both-sider things, right, the way they just talked about it, like in CNN and the kind of the traditional people that get rolled out, you know, it frames it for Americans who don't really think about this stuff all that much as kind of thinking about these two, like, states, right, these two nations at war. But that's not what it is, right? It's one nation with these territories that are being ripped apart, right? And like in the same way as an apartheid state. So, you know, you see these kind of younger folks, millennials and Gen Z, coming out and look at Free Palestine. They're entering into this different discourse, looking at historical precedents and think like, yeah, this is much more like South Africa, right? Than it is like two warring states. So, I mean, this is, you know, it does feel in some ways like a turning point. But, you know, again, the difficulty of that is, we also saw these radicalized, like right-wing radicalized Israelis, right? And again, let me be clear, that doesn't mean everyone in Israel, right? These right-wing radicalized Israelis who were out there kind of cheering what they thought at the time was the burning of the mosque, right? And, you know, and that's not good. So we also see the kind of the deepening of these radicalization, very much like we're seeing here in this country. So, but, you know, we'll see. I mean, I think that what's got to happen right now is we've got to do everything we can to try to stop the
and the United States can end this conflict by just turning off the spigot.
Yeah, exactly. Take away the funding.
I mean, like, and they'll like that tune will change real quickly. Like, yep. I mean, we have the power to stop this by, you know, like, but.
And unlike years past, it's not just like one or two Democrats, right, that are the sole, like, you know, like objectors. Now you've actually got a legitimate, like, public argument inside the Democratic Party over the kind of the unquestionable kind of support for Israel. So this is a really important turning point, I think.
Yeah.
In other news, hey, why don't we just I'm going to let Representative Tim Ryan do the introduction for this segment. This is Tim Ryan on the floor of the House this week.
Is recognized for 30 seconds.
I want to thank the gentleman from New York and the other Republicans who are supporting this and thank them for their bipartisanship. To the other 90% of our friends on the other side of the aisle, holy cow, incoherence. No idea what you're talking about. Benghazi, you guys chased the former Secretary of State all over the country, spent millions of dollars. We have people scaling the Capitol, hitting the Capitol Police with lead pipes across the head, and we can't get bipartisanship. What else has to happen in this country? Cops, this is a slap in the face to every rank and file cop in the United States.
Here comes the best
part.
If
we're going to take on China, if we're going to rebuild the country, if we're going to reverse climate change, we need two political parties in this country that are both living in reality, and you ain't one of them.
You ain't one of them.
So I will like to rebut this just one thing.
There's about three things in here we could rebut, but go ahead. Yeah. You go first.
There is no need for a bipartisan commission. Like, that is a cop-out by the Democrats.
Yep.
If the Democrats think that they are the ones who are not living in reality, if they think that the Republicans will be good faith actors with bipartisan commission, they have the power to do this now. They have a power to establish a commission. And this is them just pushing, kicking the can down the road when this is clearly going to be an issue in the 2022 elections. Like, and it's almost as if the Democrats don't want to talk about January 6th.
Well, okay, I've got a little bit different take on this. I think that I agree. I have the same reaction. We said, you know, you talk about bipartisanship, right? I mean, I think that is, nobody cares about bipartisanship, except for Democrats and Republicans in, you know, the two parties that are in Washington. That's their discourse and the Washington media discourse, right? Kind of like when you step outside of that a little bit, really.
No, I think it's also the discourse with
bipartisanship. They don't care about that.
I think it's also the discourse within our institutions here in Pennsylvania. I mean, like, you have people who have spent months trying to overturn the election here in Pennsylvania. And then you have Democrats like Jared Solomon and others form this bipartisan caucus.
Civility caucus?
Not even a civility caucus, like a bipartisan caucus with Republicans who sign their names on these letters. And it's just like, what the fuck are you people thinking? Like, right. There is no need for bipartisanship with this.
Well, look,
like, okay. They tried to overturn an election and they caused an insurrection with their lies. Like, they have to face an accountability, face a reckoning. And, like, feigning over bipartisanship is not going to do that.
No, I agree with that. Except the one thing, the one caveat I would give is that, look, if I can understand the politically speaking, right, I think the leverage there is to say, look, you either join in or you're one of them. You're one of the nut jobs, right? There's leverage there in terms of political discourse. Like, why would you call for Republicans to be part of stuff? Because you're basically giving them this one public option. Here you go. Where are you going to stand with the kind of traitors, or are you going to come over here? Are you going to stand with the nut jobs, or are you going to come over here? But that is different than actually having any hope at all that that's going to happen. Right. So there's a political advantage, I think, of doing that. But I do think that there's too many Democrats who are just like believe that they need bipartisanship and they want to get.
OK. And then but if this commission does come and with the concessions that were made, they're going to stack it anyway with people like Jim Jordan, Scott Perry, people who Biggs, you're going to put Biggs on there or Briggs or something like that.
That's
like
the
people,
problem, right.
Like you're no, fuck that. Like, yo, use the hammer. Right. You have a hammer. Like, to go on the offensive, use it.
I agree. And that would be like where, you know, the Schumer. Now, see, I think there's something else going on here politically. And I think that this is what I find to be one of the more problematic, like even more problematic, is that, and this is like, I think, Democratic Party's complete kind of misread of like the political situation or anything like this. And here it is that Chuck Schumer is basically rushing the vote in the Senate, like on this commission, right? The January 6th commission. Because I think the leadership of the Democratic Party, still like Schumer, still believes that this is one of the issues that matters to, like, the most to American people. So there's stories that were starting to appear this morning, even kind of late last night, that were saying that, the specter of the filibuster emerges again over the January 6th insurrection. And what I think is going on here, I think that the Democratic leadership, like in D.C., believe that this is the issue that they're going to have massive political support in Americans to get rid of the filibuster. And I just think that's absurd. I mean, that's such a misreading of what's going on there. I think the infrastructure bill, right, is a great example of that. Voting rights is a great example of that, that would be to push the filibuster thing. But they think that this is one of these kind of like bipartisan issues, right, that everybody will be on board. And I think it's going to come back on their face, because I think the Senate Republicans are going to go hard on this, and it's going to be a sham. And then Democrats are going to waste a ton of freaking time, right, backpedaling and kind of making this kind of public case about this, about how can you support the traitors? Can you believe this? This kind of like, you know, this faux outrage. I mean, good, like, just reason to be outraged. I'm not just kind of downgrading it. But, what's on the other side of it is exactly a situation like you say, right? It's just going to be more circus. And why are you spending political capital on this as your primary issue, as opposed to pushing hard on voting rights and so on? That's just kind of one of my takes.
I mean, and they're also weaponizing the insurrection and the big lie with the attacks on voting rights. I mean, like, and what we're seeing, it just is baffling that the party leadership, the people in power, cannot understand this.
Right.
Like, it is just, I mean, like, you know, with the next thing we're going to be talking about, like, there's this ProPublica piece that came out this past week. Like, Trump launched a whole entire, like, new breed of mega donors within the party. Like, people who have never really given that much money before Trump. Like, they might have given a couple $100,000 in the years leading up to Trump election, but they're giving tens of millions of dollars, like, post-Trump to, like, Republican causes. And these aren't just people who, like, are, like, you know, small tax, no tax conservatives that we've seen. No, these are people who don't believe, these are QAnon, white nationalists, white supremacists, you know, COVID deniers, like, rich people. Like, uber rich people who are giving out all this fucking money. Like, Trump launched this new wave of Republican donors, and it's like the people, it's now like the QAnon movement within the Republican Party has their own ATM machine, and this is right. Only going to embolden them even more with these lies and with, you know, undermining our political system.
Right. This is the next round of, like, you know, these billionaire donors, like, you know, you like the Koch brother funds, like, you know, like the Skaths, like those people that we are kind of,
I mean, these make,
since 2010.
These make Koch look like a Democrat, pretty right. much.
Exactly.
Like, this is how crazy these people are.
Yep, exactly. And you've got people on here, like, you know, they give a list of names. We have a link in the show notes to like a chart that they put together of all these different donors. And I think it's really important that we all become super familiar with this. We're going to be digging into this too as well. You're going to hear us talking about this more and more, because I'm sure some of this money is going to be showing up right here in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania has already been identified as one of those states where the kind of right wing is going to go hard, where voter rights are under attack.
There's also something else that came out last week, speaking of Pennsylvania. Jeffrey Yass, there was another article about him in WHYY while we were away, and he's Pennsylvania's richest person. I mean, they're expecting him to spend $75 million in the state of Pennsylvania next year.
Yep.
Like, this is who we're dealing with. And Yass is the one pushing money to the Commonwealth Foundation PACs that, you know, were going after you know, the Leaders Fund and the Children's Choice Fund. You know, like this is like he's putting his name out there. He's doing this.
Yep.
He dumped a couple hundred thousand dollars in the Harrisburg's mayoral race. You know, he's dumping, you know, Eric just tweeted out that he's dumping money into Andrew Yang's campaign in New York.
Yep.
Like this guy is starting to put money around in these Democratic cities. So, I mean, like, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to see it. And look, a lot of these donors are coming out of Florida, but we've got some people like right here in Pennsylvania, right? There's this one listed here. This is Walter Buckley and Marjorie Buckley. They're retirement investment advisor. They're in Radnor, PA. Their source of wealth comes from the Buckley Moything, I guess, capital management. It's an investment firm. Before Trump, they gave about $336,000 to kind of Republican cases. Post-Trump, once Trump got elected, $14.15 million. Right. That just kind of gives you a kind of a sense of this stuff. You got the Mellons, right? The Timothy and Patricia Mellon that are coming out of Saratoga, Wyoming. They listen to this one. Their funding comes from, or their source of wealth comes from the Mellon banking fortune and rail companies, the Pan Am Systems. Their key issues are the, you know, the big tax cut they put money into. And here's some of the controversies around this. In a self-published autobiography, Mellon criticized Black Americans as, quote, unwilling to pitch in to improve their own situations, unquote, and called people who receive government benefits, quote, slaves of a new master Uncle Sam, unquote. Right. And that's according to the Washington Post. Let's break down the numbers. Before Trump, they gave about $305,000 to these causes. Post-Trump, $70.19 million, right? We're talking huge amounts of money here and a whole new conglomeration of influence, right? Exactly what Sean said is like, you know, this makes the Kochs look like Democrats.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I wonder if the Mellon family is related to the Scaifes and Mellons in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, who have a long history.
The investment in the rail company, I believe it's the same family.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say that until I know.
The Scaifes and the Mellon family have a history of funding hardcore white nationalist nonprofits. You know, you look through their foundation reports and the groups they're giving money to, like very, very racist organizations that they're funding. So
it's crazy. So we'll keep an eye on that. I'm gonna definitely look and dig into this report quite a bit. This might be maybe even like a candidate for one of the things for Out the Coop Live this week if some of the other things don't work out. Because it'd be fun to dig into this. But we'll see where it goes from there. Cool. Just new reports on EPA. This is another thing that we're seeing some of the consequences of the Trump administration. A lot of data and the compilation of data that has been kind of like in the EPA was kind of squashed, right? So the EPA has finally put a newly compiled report together about some of the impacts on climate, and it is what you've expected. I mean, we've all witnessed the wildfires. We've all witnessed kind of like we've all experienced this stuff firsthand. But now we have confirmation once again that, yes, the climate effects are already being felt directly here kind of in this country. It's a pretty big deal, right? So we're seeing this kind of persistent flooding. We're seeing all sorts of increases of temperature. Like if you recall, we saw the flooding of the whole Midwest, right? Where kind of like millions and millions of dollars in crops were lost. People lost their livelihood, right? As direct result of this kind of like, you know, these torrential downpours that wouldn't let up. And these, you know, we see mudslides, all this kind of stuff is going on. So all the more reason we need kind of dramatic action. All the more reason we need to get rid of the filibuster. All the more reason that Democrats have got to continue to have a spine and we need to keep on putting pressure directly upon them. So, in other news, Sean, did you follow the Ford F-150 Lightning launch?
No, I did not.
It is, it's fascinating. Now, look, I have to say.
I get a sustainable pickup truck now?
More than sustainable. Well, let's put it this way. It's still an individual thing. This is what I want to lead off with. Let's preface all this with, look, we recognize in order to combat climate change, right, it's not just a matter of electrifying vehicles, right? It's about shifting in the ways that we do transportation, right? That's as important, right? So if we put kind of like if our infrastructure funding went into instead of roads, right, went into rails, right, that would be a heck of a lot better. right? Because you don't have, again, what are roads made of, right? Asphalt, right? What's an asphalt, right? Petroleum, right? You know, so this is, this is not the ultimate solution. It doesn't solve problems like congestion. It doesn't change our working lives, right? It doesn't have a bunch of impact. However, given the fact that, you know, the automobile industry, right, and our use of individual automobiles is a significant, has a significant impact on climate, right, is one of the largest contributors to CO2 emissions. This is big news. Because the Ford F-Line trucks, right, are the best-selling car in the United States and have been for decades. They're one of the top sellers in the world, right? They dominate everything else, right? Rachel Maddow the other night had a little breakdown of some of this about what the impact is. It's like the Ford F-Series truck, right? Is like the single like largest consumer good produced in this country by like factors of 10 or something like this, right? It's billions of dollars come out of these things, right? So what Ford did basically, we're putting up with this, the F-150 Lightning, that's what it's called. Not only did they make an electric truck, they made an electric truck which is better than a combustion engine, right? And has features in it that no other combustion ones would. So for example, right, because you don't need an engine, a combustion engine, that whole big front area of the truck is a giant trunk, right? And there's a full generator built in.
You don't need a transmission.
You don't need a transmission, right? It goes to 0 to 60 in about 4.4 seconds because you don't have to wait for the combustion engine to kick in. It's immediate. It's more powerful, right, than the regular F-150, right? So this is huge, right? So not only – and the fact that they're doing at a price point of around $40,000. Now, look, $40,000 is a lot of money, right? I get it, right? It's not like your baseline time. But if you look at the number of Ford F-150 trucks out there, there's a freaking ton of them. And there's a lot of people, right, that are buying $40,000 trucks – right, as their bang around car, right? This is just they don't need it. They don't need it for work. They don't need it for that. They're doing it because it's a big truck. You could dominate the road, right? So the F-150 is a big deal. And if Ford, why it's also a big deal is that if they are able to ramp up production, and it seems like that the Biden administration is, there's a reason why he showed up in the Ford plant, right? In order to promote this idea to make this kind of made in America with union jobs, right? And to build the infrastructure here too as well, and the supply chain. So in this, you know, in this bill that Biden like laid out for in support of electric vehicles, right? They also talk about bringing battery production, right? Right here in the United States. I mean, this is what the auto industry did like originally, right? The supply chain was near the plant, right? It wasn't something you had to ship from overseas. So it actually is a jobs plan too as well. And they've actually given money, and this is, you know, you give back to the companies, but whatever, to basically switch over their production to the production of electric vehicles to kind of speed that up and ramp that up. So if you have that, you be able to get this truck, a better truck than the combustion engine F-150, right, for the same cost, if not a little bit lower than the combustion engine truck, and it has more features, right? That's a winner, and that's a potential game changer. So, I think this is, you know, as much as we need to critique the idea about the individual vehicles, this is nonetheless a huge step forward. If for nothing else, if the money goes into the research and development of battery technology, right, that could get shared kind of across the spectrum, right, to get us away from kind of fossil fuel consumption. So big news this week, I think. Great. I don't know. Anything else on the national score, Sean?
No, nothing too much.
All right, cool. I'm looking to get forward to Pennsylvania one because I know it's a big week in PA.
Yes, we just spent our phone call this morning just bragging for about a half hour about all the victories that happened. So
all right,
it was fun.
Yeah, here we go. So let's not hesitate. Let's get right to it then. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to break into the amazing news in Pennsylvania for this week. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. You can help support this broadcast and all of our broadcasts, like our new show. If you've seen, Cyril Michaleko is going to be joining me biweekly for Wednesdays with Cyril. And I will be breaking down what's happening in Bucks County and kind of a PA politics. That's a brand new feature. Eventually, what that Wednesday show is going to be a consistent Wednesday show too as well. We're going to have this kind of like every other week with Cyril. And then we're going to have some kind of pointed kind of shows in between, but more on that here. But for now, we have the biweekly show with Cyril Michaleko. We've got our Monday Out to Coop live show. And we've got here our news roundup of good, the bad, the ugly in state and national politics. That's all possible because of our patrons. So thank you once again to all of our patrons. Thank you for the people who've been supporting Raging Chicken since the very beginning back in 2011. What you're doing is helping build out this kind of this independent progressive media site. So thank you. You can go to patreon.com/rcpress and you become a patron today for as little as $5 a month. We'll be back right after this quick break.
Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1984. That was the day Toledo auto workers at AP Parts Plant battled police in an attempt to save their union. The battle unfolded on the 50th anniversary of the historic Toledo Auto Light Strike. 400 members of UAW Local 14 had been on strike against the parts plant since May 2nd. The company imposed a final offer that stripped workers of their seniority rights, ended 30 and out pensions, and cut wages by 40%. They then laid off 175 workers and targeted the rest with a campaign of harassment and discipline. Workers walked off the job when the NLRB dismissed the union's unfair labor practice charges. Local newspapers printed the names and addresses of striking workers in a blatant attempt to blacklist them from area employers. Strikers had had it with AP's union-busting tactics, which included paying the hated private goon squad, Knuckles Security, $45,000 a week to escort scabs into the plant. The final straw came with an injunction restricting the number of pickets. In an act of solidarity, area unions came together for a show of union strength. Thousands of UAW people from area auto plants joined with striking OCAW refinery workers at the main gate to challenge the new injunction. Police in full riot gear charged the crowd with tear gas, clubs, and pellet guns, beating and arresting dozens of strikers. A pitched battle ensued between workers and police that lasted up to 18 hours until the company was finally forced to eject scabs from the plant. While workers were jubilant, the strike served as a warning about the future of small parts plants. The strike dragged on for months, ending in deep concessions and outsourcing. Labor History in Two brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken, here once again with Sean Kitchen with our weekly news roundup for the good, the bad, the ugly in state and national politics. I want to give a special shout out for the beginning of the break to Brian and Christopher, both Brians and Christopher. Thank you so much for alerting me that we had a sound issue that I apologize for those folks who are tuning in on YouTube that did for our live stream that did not hear the beginning of the second part. And I wanted to make sure that we were going to redo it and put it in because it was good stuff. It was good stuff. So Sean, this week, this is why I was excited to get into the kind of the second part today, the PA focus here, because, you know, when it comes to progressive politics, man, we talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. Well, this had a big capital G good, right, in progressive politics this week. So why don't you kind of break us down what happened this week?
Okay, so we're going to run through everything with the primary victories?
Yep, start right there.
Okay, I guess sorry. We'll do it again.
I got to make Sean do this again. I'm sorry.
We'll do it live. there are a ton of victories here happening in Pennsylvania with the primary. I would say that, you know, like we are going from this is pretty much like the third or fourth year in a row where we've had really good victories with the progressives. You know, it started with Larry Krasner back in 2017, continued with getting Sarah Summer and Elizabeth elected to the state house in 2018 with their victories. We were the first ones out in front on that and called it pretty much like months before that primary even happened. You know, and continued with 2019. Last year, we had Rick Kajewski and Nikhil Saval get elected. And no, I mean, it just continued again this year. We had, so Larry Krasner won his reelection bid in a landslide against the FOP-endorsed candidate, Carlos Vega. The FOP and other pro-police PACs spent $250,000 to try to unseat him and lost pretty handily by like a 2-1 margin. Krasner gained a lot of allies in the Court of Common Pleas this week in Philadelphia. Seven of the eight seats went to nominees endorsed by Reclaim, the Working Families Party, and other criminal justice reform organizations like the Abolitionist Law Project. And, you know, we're seeing that, you know, out west. One of my favorite people, State Representative Ed Gainey, he won his race against Bill Peduto. Gainey is someone I've known in Harrisburg for a few years, sort of like a small political hero of mine. One of the most very boisterous, knows how to like talk to a crowd. Definitely has like that preacher mentality. You know, he knows how to read the room and speak, you know, everything. A very powerful speaker.
Someone that you've always talked about as being like one of the most like human and kind of like all around good people.
One of the nicest people in Harrisburg. Someone that I'm hopefully going to try to interview him next week for our website for Spotlight. You know, I want to sit down and talk for about 20 minutes about everything. So a little teaser on that.
I think that these two races too, as well. I mean, this really shows you about, I think, the shift in discourse that we're seeing, right, when it comes to, you know, the questions of race and policing. I mean, and this all goes to Black Lives Matter movement, goes to kind of progressive movements on the ground that have really shifted the discourse and made it possible to, you know, showed people basically you can win with this, right? This is actually a popular message for this police reform. And the fact that when the police unions step in, like they have in the past, right, throw their weight around, this is like, you know, this may be like them exposing their brand to be kind of, you know, all but useless.
Yeah, and I think we saw how out of touch Peduto was during this past year. You know, he would tweet stupid shit out at like 12:00 in the morning. Well, you know, he compared the far left to the far right. You know, this is in a city that had one of the worst mass shootings carried out against the Jewish population in this country's history. And he was comparing the Black Lives Matter protesters, the progressives and socialists to these far right, alt-right neo-Nazis. Very like, you know, he fucked up in a lot of ways. And it's good that he lost. He was backed by SEIU Healthcare PA, One Pennsylvania. Gainey was backed by.
I was supposed to say Gainey was backed by,
Gainey became a movement candidate after the Black Lives Matter demonstrations and the murder of George Floyd last year. It's fun seeing him win. It's going to be sad seeing him leave the state house. But he earned it. He was one of the nicest people. I mean, we saw like the power that Summer Lee is building in Allegheny County with Unite.
I just wonder what that also is going to mean for his seat then too, right? I mean, that's an opening, I mean, for like another, say, progressive run by somebody out there.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. The Allegheny Democratic Committee is not the best. Is pretty fucking out of it committee. They will decide who the next person is that's going to be in that seat. So we'll see what happens.
They get to pick, there's not going to be a special election?
There's a special election with a Republican running, yes, but like they get to pick.
They get to pick the candidate.
Yeah, they get to pick who's going to be running in that. So there won't be a primary for it.
Gotcha.
Progressives will most likely have to wait until 2022 to try to win that seat. It'll be interesting to see what happens. You know, you had Gainey was supported by representatives like Summer Lee, Austin Davis, who's another person that's going to be coming up and coming on in the western side of the state. Allegheny County banned solitary confinement. There was a couple of ballot measures that passed, criminal justice reform ballot measures that passed, that were huge victories in Northwest Pennsylvania, which, you know, we don't really think about Erie as being a progressive bastion of progressive politics, but like we have a transgender person, Tyler Titus. They won their primary for county executive. They'll face off against the Republicans, and they have the opportunity of becoming the first transgender person in an elected executive county position across the country.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Still going on. There's more. We have Ezra Naines. He crushed his primary election in state college. He'll become the first Jewish mayor of the city's history. Ezra is an awesome person. I sat in a fundraiser, virtual fundraiser with for Laura Shadle. She ran for jury commissioner out there. Laura has one of the best campaign logos and campaign signs ever. Definitely recommend looking that up on Twitter. She won her election by like 9,000 votes or 8,000 votes in the 10,000 person race, which is pretty fun. But I mean, you're just seeing this, you're seeing the Democratic Party in Pennsylvania shift. And it's not just in Philadelphia, like the whole entire party is becoming more progressive. And I mean, a lot of resources were poured into these races by progressive organizations. A lot of organizing was done by progressive groups across the state in this stuff. Unfortunately, CeCe Gerlach lost her race.
Yeah, that was a shame. I have to say I was surprised by that. I mean, I've known her for a while. Like, I remember from, I mean, if you remember way back when you had the walkouts in Allentown and things like this, if you go back and dig back into some of the Rage Chicken stories from say years ago, when she was on the board, I guess it's like, you know, she was a great person to talk to try to kind of understand the lay of the land there. And she's somebody who's got, you know, who's been connected with that community, with progressive communities, with people on the ground there. And I thought she had enough clout there that she was really going to come out on top, but that was unfortunate. I hope she'll come back for that though.
Yeah. I know also what we have, some progressive candidates won in Allentown City Council. I didn't really look into that, but I think you know, and then here in Harrisburg, which is not really that progressive of a victory, you know, more of a, like people will say lateral move. City Council President Wanda Williams defeated Eric Papenfuss. She's going to become the second Black woman to become mayor in Harrisburg. She raised only $30,000 and won this race. Everyone else raised like $300,000 or $400,000. Banks was individually funded by Jeffrey Yass. Schenkweiler was funded by all the white Republicans on the West Shore. You know, he raised hundreds of thousands of dollars from them. He hired, you know, this extremely conservative messaging firm to do his stuff. Papenfuss was linked to, she linked Papenfuss to all of his Republican donors. Which was pretty interesting. Like, she spent $30,000 pretty much on a handful of yard signs and mailers. So she won. We're going to have a Democrat who will not be privatizing money-making assets for the city, which is something Schenkweiler and Banks were telling people they do in public and private. Apparently, Schenkweiler and Banks went to try to sell the school district if they would have won and privatized the whole entire thing, which thankfully that's not happening. Yeah, and then Marty Flynn won his special election to replace Senator Blake in a district that's been trending more Trump-like up in northeastern PA. Paige in Luzerne County. I don't know her last name. The mayor of Scranton or Wilkes.
Oh, right.
She won her campaign re-election last week. Basically had a whole bunch of white dudes running against her. And, you know, in like a 3 or 4 way primary, she got 72% of the vote.
I got to get, you know, she's someone I got to reach out to because I'd love to talk to her, but I'm glad you said that. I got to look her up again.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's pretty much it. The rundown of progressive victories this week happening in the municipal levels.
Well, and some not so progressive kind of news when it comes to elections. I mean, you know, we've been talking a little bit about the Pembridge School Board right here in my neck of the woods. And as you know, Cyril Mikulenko has joined the Raging Chicken family, if you will, of podcasts. So he and I are going to be doing a biweekly Wednesday show, Wednesdays with Cyril, I'm calling it at this point. And Cyril has been kind of reporting on some of the craziness in Bucks County. And one of the reasons we wanted to do this is because Bucks County has become one of these kind of bellwether counties, right? And it mirrors a lot of some of the stuff that's happening at the statewide politics. And you've got a quote-unquote moderate Republican who represents the area, but in Fitzpatrick. But the whole county is beginning shifting much more kind of much more progressive, right? Not just more Democratic, but also more progressive. So it's really kind of interesting. At the same time, we've got some really deep QAnon holes that we've got to kind of fill in here. The well of the crazy goes deep here. And we've got, you know, there were primaries this past week, and you had the Republican Party, Democratic primary. And in the Republican primary, as was, I think, expected, you had a slate of candidates that leans toward the Q, who won this. So in particular, Chaykin, who she is, you know, she had basically on her Parler account. Yes, I said Parler account. Her name is Ricky Norley Chaykin. Her Parler account, she actually had an image of like an American flag with a kind of on fire Q kind of like superimposed over top of it. So that gives you a sense of kind of where we're going. Both Ricky Norley Chaykin and I believe it was Christine Baticki were kind of leading some like maskless protests to the store where they would kind of like take selfies of themselves going into grocery stores and stuff like that, refusing to wear their masks. And these are the people that are going to be representing the Republican Party when it comes to the election, the school board election. And also, I think a kind of an indicator too as well, there was one person, right, who I don't know why I'm spacing her name right now. I'm going to forget her name. I'm sorry. Walters was her name. That she basically was Lisa Walters was running, and she actually had a fair amount of support by Republicans and Democrats. She was kind of seen as kind of like a kind of down the middle kind of candidate that was well liked. She didn't get elected in the primary on either ticket, right? So it seems that the lines are even kind of more clear here, and people wanting to take a stand, which I think in many ways is a great idea. Yeah, thank you, Ross. And Ross, hey man, you had my vote. I gotta say, I was pulling for you. We're kind of passing out there. Ross McClellan, was also running there. He was the kind of the Bernie guy running with some really good, I thought, some great ideas in terms of connections with technical schools and kind of training and things like this. I hope that he's going to be along for quite a time. Oh, there is a fifth spot in November to replace. Good to know.
You know, also, I think what we're seeing, you know, there's this right wing grift happening, or not grift, but, you know, you have people going around to the school board elections. There's a lot of organizing going on. One of the people doing this organizing is Scott Pressler, who was one of the Stop the Steal organizers out here in Harrisburg. You know, he's been barnstorming around Pennsylvania, pretty much whipping these people into school board races. So, like, this is something we have to look at.
Indeed. So, this is a pretty freaking huge week, right? When it comes to Pennsylvania politics and progressive politics, which I'm absolutely thrilled about. In some other not so progressive news, right? Get your giddy up, Sean. Get your giddy up.
Grab those Spurs.
I gotta say, a lead up to this, I was incredibly disappointed that you kind of switched your Twitter name back after this week, because I was so excited that we were going to be able to kind of announce your new Twitter name. But instead, no, you went
Mastriano back. Shiny Spurs.
Mastriano Shiny Spurs is beautiful. Well, take us into this one, this little bit of craziness.
To get the joke, Mastriano wears actual Spurs. While he's in the Capitol, he attaches them to his penny loafers.
Like, not his penny loafers.
This is like a brand thing for him. He got them while he was in the Cavalry in the Army. he was on the radio this week talking about his upcoming run for governor. Didn't announce it yet, but pretty much was making fun of Lou Barletta and his extremely white teeth, which is something everyone has been doing since like beginning of time. But I mean, this is what we're going to be seeing with the primary. Barletta and Mastriano are probably going to be the two top candidates on the Republican ticket. I think Mastriano is going to be winning this primary right now. Like, book it.
But this is pretty remarkable, right? I mean, that you've got Barletta and Mastriano are the people that are kind of running this.
Pick your brand of crazy racist.
Right, exactly.
Like, they're already talking about, restricting access to the ballot box is going to be on their agenda items for the campaign. So they're going to be campaigning on voter suppression.
Well, you know, you got to campaign on what wins, right? For you.
Yeah.
among your number one constituents.
And then, you know, like Mastriano held a fundraiser last week with Rudy Giuliani out in Chambersburg. People in attendance were Kathy Barnett, Stephanie Borowitz, Rob Kaufman, who's the House Judiciary Chair, and then Rudy Giuliani himself. And Mastriano was spotted taking photographs with an insurrectionist wanted by the FBI for spraying bear spray at the Capitol Police on January 6th. So after we posted our articles and after the New Yorker story dropped a couple weeks ago, Mastriano went on that crazy unhinged rant that we talked about on our last podcast. One of the things he said, I'll pull it off because it said, quote, around 99% of the people that were in town in January, it looked like a normal event. Like, this is what he said on Facebook Live a few weeks ago. So, like, and talking about how peaceful it was. Now he's taking photos with someone who is very much indeed an insurrectionist. Someone who is a avid Mastriano fan, going to all the Mastriano events over the past year. Has been spotted at these events, who talks, Mastriano talks to them. This guy's going to be getting arrested by the FBI pretty soon.
It's it's pretty crazy. It's pretty crazy.
Like, I don't know how the insurrection stuff's going to bode well during the general, but, you know.
Well, I mean, look, I mean, we've seen this dynamic, right? We've seen this dynamic go everywhere, right? That it's going to be about activating bases as opposed to like appealing to the general populace. I mean, because this is, I mean, clearly, I mean, either Barletta or Mastriano, right? I mean, there's no like appeal to the center there, right? This is about activating base politics at this point. And I hope that's also going to be true when we see this on the, like, among Democrats.
With Shapiro running, yes.
Yeah, well, but Shapiro, we've said this before about him. Like, we've said Shapiro, at the very least, is a partisan, right? So I don't think, I think that he's going to be, I don't think he's going to have a problem. Maybe I'll be wrong, but I don't think he's going to have a problem about kind of drawing attention to the crazy, right, as part of the campaign. So if that's the appeal to the center, I'm all for it, right?
And then Shapiro got more votes than Trump and Biden in the past two elections.
Right.
So, you know, he does have a wide, broad support in the state, but, you know, it's just, like, this is what we're going to have to deal with for another election. It's going to make Scott Wagner look moderate.
Right.
Like.
Well, I'm just hoping that we see in Shapiro, like we see the fight in Shapiro and not what we saw in Wolf's last round. Right. I mean, the way that Wolf dealt with Wagner and, he won handily. Right. But it was to kind of ignore it. Right. To kind of like stay above the crazy, like stay above the fray and talk about what we're going to do and things like this. And, you know, left up the, any of the Barb stuff to Fetterman. I think Shapiro has done an excellent job, even with his national platform that he's kind of been slowly building, of bringing the Barbs, right? Staying respectful, right? Not being a Twitter troll or something like this, but actually, you know, like staying respectful, but bringing the fight. And I think that we need to see that. Right. And I think the Democratic Party in the state needs to see that too as well. Right. To help bolster kind of the power in the state.
Yeah. So.
Oh, this is interesting. We have Christopher Rodkey just posted in Facebook here. He said, you know, you'd think he'd kick it back. Talk about Mastriano, kick it back old school with footnotes done right in his book. And he said, I looked into it, by the way, and his PhD dissertation was never deposited in the library where he apparently graduated. The library said they never received it. Just saying.
Yeah, there's going to be more. So I've had conversations with Mark Scalforo from the AP about this. Definitely not going to scoop Mark on the podcast, but there is a lot more going on with Mastriano's bullshit PhD that will be coming out in the future. And you'll be surprised to find out that Mastriano is a pathological liar.
Yeah, well, there you go. We have to, we've seen evidence of that kind of like in the daylight at this point, which is good.
Yeah.
So very cool. And he says, Christopher says, like, and you know, because you go to a Canadian university to do a PhD in U.S. military history, right? So,
yeah.
Anyways.
There's some, he has some crazy stuff out there. Like, he has a crazy cosplay master's thesis from, like, that's almost like a Rambo type, like, fucking thing from the 2000s.
Nice.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I mean, he has some stuff out there that is just like batshit crazy going back 20 or 30 years. Like, he's been off his rocker for a while. I mean, I'm pretty sure that New Yorker story,
scratch like, the surface, maybe.
I mean, like, the quote from that New Yorker story where, like, he thought his wife, Rebby, like, the her praying about the sandstorm is like what won them the war.
That's like, that is really freaky. I mean, that's like freaky stuff. That's like The Mummy, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's like a scene from The Mummy.
I mean, not only is this guy like a crazy, like, white nationalist and Christian nationalist, like, he will turn Pennsylvania into a theocratic, like, dictatorship. Like, yeah. Fascist, theocratic dictator is what he'll try to be.
100%. 100%. Well,
so
here we have it.
I know, like, what I'm worried about is him activating his crazy base once he loses
exactly
the primary or an election. Like, you know, like, he has a lot of people. And I've been going to these rallies for a while, and this is who his people are. So I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, yeah, cool. So more to come, everybody. Here we go. In other news in this score, this week, the PA Senate Democratic Caucus continued their hearings on the Pashi consolidation. That they're doing this in precisely because that they do not believe that there is going to be any other kind of real opportunities to actually hear from faculty and staff and students and kind of people that are going to be impacted in communities. So this is kind of really important. And they've been great hearings. State Senator Katie Booth has done a great job kind of putting these things together. You had State Representative Emily Kincaid this week said, quote, earlier this month, I participated in a joint House Appropriations and Education Committee hearing to discuss the proposed consolidation. And as a Pashi University graduate, I was extremely disappointed and frustrated in the significant lack of detail of the plan Chancellor Greenstein presented to us. This hearing highlighted many of the ways the consolidation plan fails to give our Pashi staff, faculty, students, clarity, and peace of mind. We need more details before we can move forward. And in that hearing that she's talking about, she's on the Appropriations Committee, right? And one of the things that she said is like, look, we are promised a whole bunch of information about economic impact studies. We said that there's, we're going to answers about what students felt. The chancellor has consistently made claims that students are broadly supported. We did a student survey, yet they don't release the survey results or how it was even conducted or the questions that were asked. And she basically called them out in that hearing, not just in the PA Summit Democratic Caucus one, but actually in the joint House Appropriations and Education Committee hearings, and basically said, look, we went through all this. You promised me in the last hearing that we're going to have answers to these stuff, and we've got nothing. She made him incredibly uncomfortable, right? And so she came forward and said that too, and actually hit the nail on the head. So those hearings continue. Abscuff has been doing live tweeting from each of those hearings about what's going on. Abscuff president Jamie Martin was in the first round of those hearings last week, and kind of laid out the case. And you get to hear from really articulate students. You get to hear from the impacts from the folks from the AFSCME leadership, and what's going to, the kind of impact this is going to have in these small towns and communities. I mean, all stuff that we've been talking about here. But to see the fact that, to see that you've got the PA Senate Democratic Caucus doing these hearings and actively promoting them and pushing out materials on this, shows you the direction that this caucus is going. So kudos to them.
Same thing with the House. The House Democratic Policy Committee. Too.
Yep. 100%. Yep, absolutely. And the last thing I'll say before we go to a break is that, like I said, Cyril Michaleko, who we're doing this biweekly show now on Wednesdays, his new piece just dropped. And the title of it is pretty simple. Only a political uprising can save PA's higher education system. There you go. Michaleko echoes what we've been saying for years on this program, that only organizing and direct action get the goods. I don't mind kind of giving a little self-plug in there, but I'm featured in the article too as well, which is like really good. Thank you for the shout out for Raging Chicken too as well. I appreciate that. Just to give you a sense of Cyril's piece, do check that out. You can find it in the Intelligencer and the Bucks County Courier Times. It also just showed up in the York Dispatch Record this morning, I believe. So you can check it out there too as well. But here's the lead, right? The lead paragraph. So, quote, Pennsylvania's higher education faculty and students need to stand up, fight back, and demand a different version, a vision of the future of the state's higher education system, because right now one thing is clear: their voices don't matter. The culprit, Pennsylvania State System of Higher Education Chancellor Daniel Greenstein. He didn't land in PA by accident. He parachuted in from Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation after searching for a place to use as his professional laboratory, unquote. So that gives you a little bit of flavor of Cyril's take on that. So do check out his piece too as well. There'll be a link in the show notes. I'm sure we're going to talk a little bit more about it on the show next week. So anything else going on PA that you want to throw in, Sean?
Nothing too much. I think that's pretty much it.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And once again, super thanks to Christopher and Brian for the heads up about the sound problem in there. For those folks who listen to the podcast, you will not hear that. But we were kind of for several minutes without sound going into the feed for YouTube, and they alerted to us. So thank you once again. All right. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We will be right back after this quick break with this week's Last Call. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull-no-punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out to Good Podcast. It's our last call, and we've got sound. Yes, we do. Where we talk space news, beer news, and whatever else is on our mind. Got some quick space news this week. If things are heating up in the in what is going to be, I think, a defining time in space exploration and space science. Bill Nelson, who he was a representative, I believe, for a long time out of Florida, I'm pretty sure, I think. He's basically taken over and was confirmed as NASA's chief administrator, right? So he had his first hearings that came this past week. And he basically kind of said, no, look, we're going forward with our Artemis program. There was some concern that under a Biden administration, there was going to be a kind of a pullback in some of the funding for this. He said, no, we're going forward with the Artemis moon program, as well as kind of additional Mars ambitions. But of course, he had to do it with a little bit of kind of national fervor, right, by kind of talking about the China threat, right? I mean, he didn't call it the China threat, but, you know, it was one of these weeks where we saw, you know, last week or 2 weeks ago before our last show, China had launched its the first stage of its space station, right? So there's going to be two space stations that are going to be in Earth orbit, and then we had to worry about kind of where it was going to come down and if we were all going to die because of the space station, or for the rocket booster that came down in an uncontrolled descent, but it landed in the sea, which was fortunate for everybody. But so he had to kind of say, oh, what are we going to do? I do think, however, that is going to play not so much the kind of the Chinese thing, but I think having a competitor, right, and being first in all this is actually having an effect in Congress in terms of getting support behind these programs, because not wanting to kind of to cede the moon to China. I know, right? I know. This is how we go. But it's so basically we said, no, we're going ahead with the Artemis program. As of yet, they have not officially changed the dates. Remember, they're supposed to be talking about 2024. We'll see if that deadline holds. But it will be kind of pretty fascinating to see what goes on. Now, I know that this is this kind of follows basically around the same time we saw China became the second country to successfully soft land a rover on Mars. It's called the Zhurong. I think I got that right. Zhurong rover. Just sent back some pictures from Mars, right? Looks kind of similar to some of the first rovers that kind of the U.S. put down there. We kind of have the flat solar panels that kind of unfolded. They showed it kind of unfolding or how it unfolds and took pictures of the rover and kind of the Martian landscape were there. So China's in the game. That was part of their Taiyuan 1 mission. So they actually have an orbiter that's kind of orbiting Mars to actually help send back data. They sent back those images, so that was kind of pretty cool. But, you know, if there's any questions about, you know, is this all talk or is this actually going to happen? Well, there's this company called Firefly Aerospace that they're a smaller company, private company that they've been getting in the game pretty big over the past few years. I haven't talked a lot about them on the podcast, but they do have the single kind of coolest logo. I'm just going to say that. And if anybody's a sci-fi fan, you know that Firefly was actually a sci-fi thing. It was this kind of little cult classic thing for a long time. I think that's a nod towards that. So Firefly Aerospace, they have this mission. It's called the Blue Ghost Lunar Lander, which is expected to go to the moon to drop a bunch of supplies, right, as part of the kind of NASA's Commercial Lunar Payload Services Task Order 19D mission, which will bring a bunch of contracted commercial payloads to the moon. That's going to take place in 2023, and SpaceX got the contract for the launch. So you see both SpaceX once again getting a kind of another boost here. I didn't go into this today because I didn't want to weigh us down too much, but there's still this kind of ongoing interesting kind of interplay between SpaceX and Blue Origin, some of these other ones about the lunar lander contract, but that we'll save that for another day. So some cool stuff happening in space, and we get to see some of these other smaller private companies starting to make names for themselves connected to this this lunar lander thing. And, you know, there's money attached to it, right? So they've got money to get to bring this stuff for this contract, which makes it seem as though that they're still going forward with it. So anyways, that's my space news for the week, Sean.
So I got a little bit of breaking news before we go into
space news.
Not space news.
No. Go ahead. What do you got?
This is like Liz Cheney news.
Oh, gosh.
That's just, you want to hear this headline? House GOP candidate admits he got 14-year-old girl pregnant when he was 18. Compare story to Romeo and Juliet.
What?
This is the...
wait. Yeah, who is this?
This is the person that's challenging Liz Cheney for Congress.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, Law and Crime has the story up. They said a video released by Wyoming State Senator Anthony Bouchard, who is running against Rep. Cheney. Liz Cheney delivered a shocking defense of the senator's own teenage sexual history. Bouchard appeared on Facebook Live for a 13-minute statement in which he admitted to impregnating a young girl, then characterized the incident as like, quote, like the Romeo and Juliet story. He did not disclose the girl's name or age in the video, but later told Star Tribune the girl had been 14 and he was 18.
Romeo and Juliet, Samson and Delilah.
So, kind of a... Yeah, so there's that.
Go ahead. Talk about the tired hands thing. I'm going to shut my mic off for a second. Talk about what's going on with tired hands.
Okay. So last week, the employees at Tired Hands forced out their owner, Jean Briot IV. Pretty much what happened was he was accused of sexual harassment and racism at the workplace, also accused of not providing PPE and unsafe working conditions throughout the pandemic. And when he was confronted by his employees over this, he resigned immediately. Tired Hands is one of the top breweries in the country. Was rated one of the top breweries of like the 2010s in the country, made to the top 50 list. It's located out on the main line. He has a couple of locations out there. It's unclear what his future role with the company will be, but the employees stated that they will be looking for new leadership. So I guess a couple of things. One, it's great that the employees took this action, took the accountability, and forced him out from day-to-day operations for, you know, racism, sexual harassment. I believe this story broke when a brewer was talking about him anonymously. You know, the Philadelphia Inquirer has a whole entire write-up on this, but it's showing you the veneer, or like the craft beer industry is not what it's made out to be, especially working in the craft beer industry. You know, we never experienced it. I never experienced or saw anything like that at Pizza Boy, but you know, it was a very interesting time. You know, it's just a very interesting article. Cause for one, I'm not surprised by this, just hearing about the person who Gene is on how pretentious and how much of a prick he is, you know, like those stories definitely circulate. And it wasn't all that shocking seeing it pop up. So,
yeah, it's interesting. I do think this is going to be, this is why I'm really excited. You know, I mentioned this before that we're going to have at some point, hopefully this summer, in the next few weeks, we're going to have the head brewer on from Narragansett Brewery out in Rhode Island. And Narragansett is not kind of like a small kind of startup. They've been around for a while and stuff, but she is the you know, the lead brewer there. And she's very interested in kind of labor questions and issues of kind of equity, issues of sexism within the craft beer industry. And, you know,
is Narragansett a union brew? Are they unionized?
I'm not sure.
Okay. I know a couple of them. I think they might.
I want to say they are, but I don't want to do this, but she's been following a bunch of some of the movements of kind of, you know, labor in the industry, in particular in the after, you know, calling out the kind of the sexism of the industry too as well. So she's pretty cool. So we're able to nail down a date. They're opening up a new brewery, so she's unable to, you know, we have to schedule at a time when it's going to be convened for her once that new brewery gets set up and stuff. Brian asks, Sean, do you know this? Is Tired Hands employee owned and operated?
I do not believe so.
I don't believe
I think Gene came from a wealthier family, was able to start that money up, start that company up with his own. So I don't know like the flux of the, but I think he was the sole proprietor.
So it's not as if, so this is actually, and I think that's even a better point, right? So this is that the employees, wasn't as if like the employees had an existing mechanism to go and kind of remove the leadership, but they had to take it upon their own to kind of refuse and force them out.
Yeah. So like the article said, so this is what the message on their Twitter account or the Instagram account said. Like, by our request, Jean has stepped down from all daily operations immediately. His wife, who I guess was aware of these allegations as well, has not been working since March. So she's been out. Like, we, the existing staff, will remain in place and continue operating as we search for new leadership to build a stronger culture here. The recent outpouring of stories about our industry have unified us in addressing our own experiences, and we stand in solidarity with anyone that has ever experienced toxic workplace abuse, racism, or sexism in the brewing industry, including workers, including our coworkers, past and present. This story comes after a few weeks ago, you had a story about Yards that was making a very hostile work conditions for a woman that was pregnant. And I don't know if they let her go, but it was another story that the Philadelphia Inquirer and like other media outlets covered. And, you know, it's shining a light on, you know, how shitty the craft beer community is.
Yeah.
Like, it is not like this happy go lucky progressive. Like, there's a whole lot of like labor issues within the craft beer movement. Very low wages. You're doing dangerous work, backbreaking work. For something like $10 an hour.
I remember this. I remember this too as well. When I guess I was surprised by this at the time. And when Free Will first opened up, they had their tap room, right? I mean, it literally was like the kind of the side of the storage room in their basement, right? Of this building. And it was just, you go in, you pick up some cases there, and they had someone running the tap. And I just struck up a conversation with
the guy was not getting paid. He was just working for tips.
Correct. Exactly. So there was there was a woman and a guy who were both, they were both sitting there, and I'm like, oh, so God, is it a decent job? And they're like, well, we're just doing this here. So if you tip us, it'd be great. I'm like, well, you're not getting paid, And I started asking around some other people. They're like, oh yeah, that's pretty common. Right. Especially kind of early on, because people in the community get charged up by it. Right. Because they want to participate, make this thing succeed. But in that is embedded, right, a really exploitative system. Right. And when you add in kind of layers of, this has been notorious in certain sectors of the craft beer industry. And I'm sure it's widespread. The depths of the kind of the male domination, the sexism that has taken place in some of those areas. So we shall see. We shall see. It's gonna be interesting. Do you remember? I'm drawing a blank, but I know that there's been some union or some unionization. Anchor Brewing, that was it. Like Anchor Brewing, kind of like shocked at things a little bit, right, by becoming kind of unionized facility. And I think this is like really the direction that folks are gonna have to go because,
And then you had Surly, another brewery. They closed down their facility, like shut down completely and moved. Just they didn't have to deal with the union.
Yeah, no, exactly.
And that's a good way of tanking your reputation within the craft beer community. Like the people in the community who enjoy the beer are pretty progressive, but you have like the bosses who will destroy a business, move somewhere else simply because they don't want to deal with the union.
Right. And, the other side of that, too, as well, is like in almost every single one of those cases, too, as well. You know, if they didn't want a union that badly, right, they could have actually paid people, right, provided them decent wages, right, and kind of benefits and working conditions. And then they probably wouldn't have had to face it. But the whole idea of it, why they move, is they want to keep the cost down. Yeah, this is what Brian kind of also chimes into as well, said, that's a conundrum for people who enjoy craft or regional brews. They hate the big breweries, but the big breweries are also all unionize, right? So on the one hand, you've had that. I think that
Yingling's not. It's the only one.
Right. Yeah, Yingling is
done. Yingling scabbed their union.
Yep. Never buy Yingling ever.
Yeah.
Anybody who listens to this podcast.
Fucking pour it down the drain.
Seriously. If you have any, pour it down the drain. I literally, when I found that out, like when I first moved to Pennsylvania, I didn't know squat, right, about anything. And I was like, oh, I want a Pennsylvania beer. And the pub down the street from me, that's what they had. You go in, you ask for a lager, and they give you a Yingling, right? And so I was like, oh, it's cool. Pennsylvania beer, like oldest craft brewery or oldest independent brewery. Like, oh, this is great. And then when I found out what they're, I remember, I think it was Rick told me, Rick Smith, who basically told me, and I'm like, okay. And I had seven like bottles of it left, and I got home and I just dumped it out. I just dumped the shit out. It's like, this is, I'm just going to get rid of it. So I'll take it as you may. On that news, right. So here we have, and that's, one of the reasons, and again, this is always wait for the shoe to drop. And I have to say the one thing, there may be situations that, you know, I always promote Free Will Brewing on this show. And the reason why is because they're in my town. And, you know, I do love the whole idea about supporting local. And I've known some people who've worked there before. But, you know, what the working conditions are, I don't actually know. So I don't want to, I want to be clear about that. Right. I do know that I was pleased that they came out for like in support of Black Lives Matter and making sure, and, you know, took a risk, especially in this area, which is, you know, has got its, you know, like I said, the deep wells of QAnon supporters and things. That was kind of very, very positive. And I, you know, I have fingers crossed. I know some women who've worked there who've loved their job. But that's, again, that's anecdotal. That's for person. So, you know, I am just only hoping that we're going to see, you know, if folks from Free Will start kind of talking about it, and it's only good news. I can hope for that, because I do think, you know, supporting these kind of local economies, I think, is really good. Right. Period. So anyways, having said that, Free Will, maybe if you go to Free Will, you can start asking people there if, kind of what it's like. I know that I've done that, asking about working there and what they think about it. This week is Sour Sunday at Free Will. This is this Sunday. I want to say it starts at noon. They have a new release this week, which is called Catch Lightning. It's a 100% spontaneously fermented sour that is carefully blended combination of 1, 2, and 3-year-old oak aged barrel stock. And then every winter, when the conditions are just right, they brew their beer. It's destined for their cool ship. They leave it overnight outside the brewery, and the beer is inoculated with their own Walnut Street air. That's where they're located. The spontaneously captured yeast and bacteria during this time is left to their own device, and they wait. And so this blend highlights the notes of bright Meyer lemon, vanilla oak, and hay. And it comes in at 4.8 ABV, and only 456 bottles were produced. So if you want to pick that up, you can pick it up this Sunday. Tomorrow on Saturday, their normal release day, they've got two releases. They got the DDH Love Letter for the 90s, which is a fabulous IPA, double dry hopped IPA brewed with flaked oats, flaked corn, and milk sugar, hopped with Galaxy, Citra, and Mosaic. It is creamy smooth, notes of tangerine, passion fruit, papaya, and mango. It's just great beer. It comes at 7.2 ABV. And Kriegel Light, for those of you who are working on your beach bod for that hot vac summer, all the hop flavor you come to know and love with Kriegel, according to the company, in a reimagined way, brewed with Citra, Simcoe, and Columbus hops, which combine to create juicy aromatics and crisp citrus taste. This is a beer for summertime's calling, all day, any day, anywhere. It's a craft you can live with, as they say, and it comes in at 4% ABV. And the other big news was that they've been working on this for a while. Free Will just opened a new tap room in Souderton connected to the Broad Street Theater. There's links in the show notes. Check out the Broad Street Theater. Rebirth of kind of local theaters. That's phenomenal too as well, in the heart of Souderton. So that's available as well. So there you have it. Anything else for the good of the order today, Sean?
No, nothing too much.
Got anything planned for the weekend?
Not really, just staying inside, enjoying the AC. maybe going to the gym in the morning. That's about it.
There you go. I'm going to be digging more. I'm going to be doing some more gardening. I'm going to go help my mother-in-law rototill her garden. Right, do my best to kind of give myself heat stroke. So that's
I may spend time talking to the herbs that I bought this week. But no, I bought some trying some different herbs this summer, so. Not the smokable kind.
I was waiting for you. I was wondering how long you can let that hang out.
But no.
Yeah, you're going to talk to the herbs. Come a little closer. Grow.
Well, like, I'm growing some oregano, hot and spicy oregano. It's amazing how pungent it is, yeah. Like, just smelling it and all. So.
Well, cool. Well, we will look for dishes that will be created with that this summer on your lifestyle channel, which is good too as well. And I also have to say the Menzinger's hoodie made the debut on the lifestyle channel too as well.
Yes, I am looking forward to getting that pretty soon. You know, it's going to be funny once me and my boss, Eric, if you follow him on Twitter, Casey Musgrave's fan account. You know, it'll be funny. He's the one who got me hooked on the Menzingers. over the past couple of years. So it's going to be funny once we're all wearing the same hoodie on our Zoom meetings. And our other coworkers are just probably like, well, what the fuck are up with these people?
Yeah, the emerging of the Menziger clan. Crazy. Well, hey, man, have an awesome weekend and kind of enjoy the weather. Enjoy the cool, I guess. Enjoy the AC. We'll be talking to you soon. And hey, everybody, thank you all for tuning in today. Let's see. Cover the discussion about PA minimum wage. I'll check it after the show. Brian just kind of chimed in our Discord about the minimum wage stuff. I'll check in on that. I want to thank you all for tuning in today, and I want to remind you in the show notes that if you look on the YouTube page, I believe that it's on there now. If not, it will be when it's released. You can join our Discord server. That's where a conversation continues on after the show, during editing sessions, and, you know, all throughout the kind of like time. So if you want to kind of follow up the conversation and continue to connect with other members, other patrons, other listeners and fans of the show, kind of we'd love to have you on our Discord server. So do check it out. Thank you all for tuning in, Sean. We'll talk to you soon, man.
Yeah, have a good one. Talk to you next week.
Yeah, you got it. All right. So this is Kevin Mahoney. Remind you, go to patreon.com/rcpress and you can become a patron for as little as $5 a month. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you Monday night for some kind of thing on Out to Coop Live. We'll talk to you then. See ya.